everybody, and welcome to the EC Method. I am one of your coaches, Chloe Madeley.
And I am your other coach, Emma Story Gordon. Our goal at the EC Method is to encourage, educate, and empower you to get the results that you've always wanted.
Listen to our weekly podcasts, go to our website, theecmethod.co.uk, or simply follow us on Instagram to get more information.
Don't know what that was. Okay, we're live.
Oh, hello everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Look at us matching.
I know. I think this is the best hoodie we've had.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
I think black on blonde just looks good.
I'm barely blonde anymore.
I mean, I'm barely a woman anymore. who even knows what's happening at this stage? Right, I'm just scrolling down to get to the last question that we answered. Oh, here we go. Right, I think I found it. Ketchup. Yeah, here we go.
Wait, can someone just confirm we're in the right group as well?
Yeah, don't make me leave this because I've just found where we were.
Wait, I'll go on and see. Because it normally pops up as a notification to me, being like, Emma's live, but it's not.
Okay, fine. Let me look in the group.
Wait, I'm looking.
Okay. But yeah, we're there.
Okay, great.
Okay, fab. Right, so let's go. Right, okay. Was just on it. We shouldn't start the podcast here, just...
Yeah, I'm sure I cut out the first part.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, okay, thanks for the great, like, Jody and Yasmin have been like, yeah, you're in the right group. And Emily's been like, yeah, I think so. How can you think so?
I think we're in
ETF. I think, yeah, okay, great.
Okay, are you ready?
Ready.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the EC Method podcast. Let's get started with the question, shall we?
Gosh, that was so smooth. Well done, us.
Thank you. Sally, if we hit the point where we're ready to come up into maintenance during the break between the two cycles, what calories should we aim for? I'm currently on 1600. It might not happen, but just in case. Okay, so Emma might say something different to me, but I would like you to add 10% to that, which would be 160 calories. Stay there for a couple of weeks, monitor your weight, and if you're staying stable or kind of losing, if you're losing, certainly come up another 10%. If you're staying stable and you want to see if you can push it, come up another 10% and repeat as needed. Emma?
Nothing to add. Would say exactly the same.
Okay. Sarah? Weights question. When you say lift to technical fatigue, let's say if I manage 15 reps in my first set, but then as the sets go on, I can only hit 10 reps. Is that still okay because I'm still lifting to technical fatigue? Yes. Sorry if that's obvious. I probably just need to hear you guys say it. I say yes. Emma?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Ashleen. Hi, Emma and Chloe. I have a very random question which I hope makes sense. When losing fat and weight training, I'll go through the process of looking a teeny bit slimmer, and then I look stodgy and puffy. The puff usually lasts for no longer than 2 weeks before it all seems to drop, and then I weigh in a little lighter and look a little slimmer. Overall fat loss seems to be going in the right direction, but I'm just curious, is this stodgy part actually a process when losing weight? Is there anything I can do to overcome these puffy weeks? Emma, I'll let you take this.
It's hormonal, like almost 100% it's hormonal. If it's happening every 2 weeks and it lasts for about 2 weeks and then it goes, like it's almost definitely to do with fluctuating hormones. A question that we always get is whenever we mention water retention for any reason, people are like, right, so how do I get rid of water retention?
You don't.
And you don't. Like the reason we're telling you is so you know it's not fat. It's so you know that it's completely normal, but it's also inevitable. Like, it will happen. Don't freak out about it. But also, there's nothing that you would need to do or want to do about it. Doesn't mean that you have to drink more water. Doesn't mean that you have to drink less water. Doesn't mean you have to take supplements. Nothing. Just accept that it's happening and move on. And I know that that's easier said than done, but there's nothing else to do. Like, mm-hmm. just do that.
Yeah, exactly. I as soon as I read it, I was like, that's hormones. So, yeah. Lucy. Hi, I was just wondering for fat loss goal, how many home body weight workouts would you limit yourself to and how many weighted? I'm just wondering whether exercises with a resistance band are just as beneficial as the weighted, but for different reasons. So in an ideal world, guys, if you have weights at home, we want you doing the weighted workouts. And I've programmed in the detailed notes how many times a week I want you to do them, which is typically 2 upper body, 2 lower body and 1 core. In an ideal world, if you guys can train 5 days a week, that would be ideal. They are preferable to the home body weight, but bands are fantastic resistance too. So if you're worried about boredom and you want to switch up, that's fine. Emma, thoughts on that?
Nope, completely agree. If you've got the weights, use them. If you want to do like a banded core workout or something to mix it up, then absolutely do that. And like if it, I would see that as like a bonus if you've hit your resistance training session, so at least 3 a week. And then you want to do an extra session as a bonus, cool. Like do a banded workout if you want to, especially for variety at the moment. Although interestingly, I found the longer this has gone on, I actually want less and less variety in my home workouts. Like I just want to get them done now. I'm not going to lie. They're not that fun. They're not that enjoyable. I'm not massively hyped up for them. So in my head, it's easier just to be like, I'm going to do this really simple workout that I've done before that I know what I'm doing, and I'm ticking the boxes now rather than getting massively amped up for a home workout.
Yeah, I'm like that anyway. Every now and again I'll drop a new exercise in and love it. Like in the last year, oh god, it's so weird now with COVID, I just don't know when was when. In the last year, lifts that have started to play a new role for me that I've loved are curtsy squats, sumo deadlifts. You know, there's always a couple things that like I'll cycle in a new exercise and see how I like it and how my body responds to it. And if I like it and I feel my muscles working how they're meant to in that lift, I'll keep it in. 99.9% of the time, my training is pretty much set in stone. Like Emma and I say this all the time, guys, the basics work for a reason. Like squats work for a reason, press works for a reason, deadlifts work for a reason. So actually this might be a good time to say that in the next round, I'm going to be doing your home weighted and home body weight workouts, and they will all be structured a little bit differently, which is exciting. So another reason for you guys to stay on will be just to freshen it up, and the gyms will be open, so Emma will probably be adding some gym bits for you as well.
Yeah, buzzing. Although you probably don't need new gym workouts because you've already not been doing them. But I'll spice them up anyway in case anyone has been adapting them for home. And actually, this is a good point to bring up. I actually found that study, although I don't have it up now, that was comparing like more varied training sessions to more consistent doing the same workout consistently. And it was a very small difference, but it's actually more beneficial to have less variety in your workouts.
Yeah.
And their variety wasn't even that much variety.
No.
Like, you're better just to stick to the basics. And the other point that I found another study while looking for that I thought was really nice, and it showed that actually taking at least 2-minute rest periods increases muscle protein synthesis more than reducing that rest period. So I know a lot of people, and this might be slightly different with home workouts where you can't lift as heavy, but it's always better if you can to rest longer and lift heavier, because I know that we see a lot of people, and it's completely normal to, I don't know, say do the first set at 15 reps and then you only get 10 reps in the second set. But my question might also be, yeah, there will be some muscular fatigue, but if you'd actually waited for 2 minutes, would you have got 15 reps again? And thus, would you be getting better results potentially? That would be my question. I know sometimes it's boring to wait a little bit. So you could do things like, okay, I'm going to do like a core exercise or something that isn't working that primary muscle group. Like I'm sure if you were doing, say, I don't know, dumbbell rows, but then in between that you did a couple of leg raises, it's not going to fatigue the same muscles. So you're still like using that time and you're not getting bored between sets, but you're having enough recovery time that you could actually lift heavier in your working sets. So do make sure that you're not limiting yourself in recovery. And I think a lot of people think that you're doing better by doing that because it's it feels harder. Of course, it feels harder to have 30-second rest between your sets. But if that means that you're not lifting as heavy, you could be limiting your potential to grow.
100% back all of that. And a nice piggyback off the back of that is that huge confusion we had in week 2 or 3, where I was on Instagram saying, do not giant set big Olympic lifts, and then look like squats, deadlifts, like thrust aren't an Olympic lift, but hey, if you're thrusting properly with heavy enough weight, like that is very fatiguing. And I had so many people on the EC method like, but you've programmed on the home body weight workouts. And then you were completely right to call me out on that. What I mean with the home bodyweight workout is if you've got baby dumbbells, baby kettlebells, resistance bands, and this is what you're using at home, which is what 99.9% of people have at home, I want you giant setting because I want you reaching fatigue, right? But I should have said, and I put this now in every single home-weighted workout, it goes without saying, if you've got an Olympic bar, a squat rack, weight plates, this does not apply to you. Like, you need to be doing single sets. And if you do superset, exactly what Emma said, and that's a great point, do something like a baby muscle group, like an ab after a squat, or like a, I don't know, a lateral raise after a squat, whatever it is. Do something which completely hits a different area, and preferentially a muscle group that produces a lot less force so that you can really recover properly. But I love that, Emma. Great points from you.
Even something sometimes, like I know that with like most exercises, especially with dumbbells, you are using your core, but it's probably not what's limiting your ability to lift more. So you could even just like add in the plank in between.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, guys, also, just lastly, my podcast with Eric Helms, the best podcast I've ever done, and my secret imaginary husband. It's out tomorrow.
Does he still have long hair?
No. Look, it's not about how he looks. It's about how he speaks. Like, he is. I mean, I just love him. So anybody who's really...
Well, it's out tomorrow.
I've got to edit it tonight. I'm obviously completely OCD mental and I need to edit all my own podcast episodes. But it's out tomorrow. And it's, if anybody who's really getting into their lifting, who really wants to understand about technical failure, absolute failure, strength, hypertrophy, reps in reserve, all of it, listen to it because you'll get a lot from it. Anybody who didn't understand a word I just said, don't listen to it because you're going to tie yourself up in knots trying to understand it.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, we obviously geek out on this and find it so interesting, but it's largely irrelevant to most people. And actually, you'll get so much from just lifting some weights 3 times a week and eating some protein. And then really what you're looking at above that is really marginal gains. Yeah. Like, when people worry that like technically eating 40 grams of protein will stimulate muscle protein synthesis more than 20 grams, but it's 10% more. Yeah. Which, and you just think, what's the cost benefit of that? Actually, that's going to hugely impact my food choices. That's going to mean that you don't have as much calories for other nutrients that are important. The environmental cost of it, like, there's so many things. It's like, actually, would that benefit? And same with some of the stuff we talk about with rep ranges and like reaching fatigue and stuff. You're getting a marginal benefit, and it is what would be quote unquote optimal, but you'd be amazed at what you would get from just hitting the, and when I say basics, I mean like bare basics of supplying some amino acids and resistance training to an extent. Like, when we look at rates of muscle protein synthesis, even walking increases muscle protein synthesis.
Yeah.
Like, the problem and why we see so many people lose so much muscle when they're bedbound is that, like, being completely inactive really wipes that. But literally any muscle stimulation is like pretty good at elevating muscle protein synthesis. So even if you're not doing it perfectly, my point is like, don't overstress about the rep ranges and things. Just make sure you're lifting with good form, lifting as heavy as you can, and doing it at least 3 times a week.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, this is, that advice is really for the advanced, like, listeners or clients that we have. Newbie gains, you really don't have to do much to gain, like, what is it in lean mass, the evidence shows can be 1.5 pounds of muscle per month for a newbie. Intermediate comes up to one, maybe. Now you need to be a bit more concerned about muscle protein synthesis, protein intake, like progressive overload, like just a little bit. If you're really advanced, that's when the really advanced info is what you're going to need to do to keep, to kind of keep your hypertrophy as optimal as possible and try and push past that genetic ceiling as best you can. But even then, there's an argument to be made that at that point, there's very little you can do anyway.
Yeah, so, I would agree with that. Like, I think at that point, maybe you're right. You would more prioritizing everything, quote unquote, right. But I still don't think you would get that much more. The biggest factor there is just time. Like, even if you were still doing the same program that got you newbie gains, they're going to be slower, but they would be slower even if you were doing everything right.
Yeah.
It's just the time. Like, you just have to accept that it's going to take time. Should I just... Penny's just asked a question on the live. Should I just read this out while it's here?
Yeah.
Okay. I really struggle with physique goals because of my age. I've got fairly lean now, but not as lean as I'd hoped. I guess, but as you know, life got in the way recently. But I'm really reining it in now on higher calories. Life's been more important. I'm starting to think about my goals again. And at my age, it's so hard to know what to do in the next stage when my gym's open. If I go for leaner, my face ends up aging. It's a shitter. Do you have any other menopausal clients struggling with this too? In my head, I'd love abs and to look quote unquote toned, but my face ages me. Do you think keep it maintenance and when the gym's open, just do hypertrophy in maintenance cals? Does that make sense? Big love.
Yeah, so it absolutely, okay, first of all, getting lines in the face and looking older when you diet down is not reserved for the middle-aged or older. Like,
I was talking to Amelia about this. She was like, one of the reasons I want to keep putting on weight is because I look really old if my face isn't fat.
100%. Well, it's an absolute true saying to say that with more lines on your body comes more lines on your face. The less body fat you have, the older and more haggard you look. And I would even say, like, to some extent, like, I think I've aged facially more than I would have had I never gotten really lean and, like, done all this, like, done the amount of preps that I've done. Like, 9 years, at least twice a year, getting to really low levels of body fat, 100% has aged me. And, you know...
Yeah, and I mean, like, looking at the extreme examples of that, if you ever look at someone who's suffering really badly with anorexia, they look like 20 years older than they are. You're like, oh, this girl's 20 and she looks like 40 odd. It does age you, and there's to an extent, like, you can't really, again, you can't choose where you lose body fat from. So some people lose it from their face really quickly and other people don't. Like, my face doesn't get massively lean.
Mine does. Mine
always has little chubby cheeks.
You've got such a pretty face. Stop. You do. You must know you do. But when I look, I would say when I get my hair and makeup done and, you know,
any solid kind of added, 11 out of 10.
Solid. Any like little bits of Botox maybe in my forehead, which I have done before, and then I'm all made up. Great. I look great because you can see my cheekbones, you can see my jawline, and it looks great. But take that makeup off, wait for that Botox in my forehead to fade. Holy fuck, I have definitely aged. So it's not reserved for someone who is, you know, older and now they get leaner and they're like, shit, I'm looking. It's 100%, it's a trade-off, like how our tits completely disappear when we get really lean. And that's why most competitors you see who have to have that balanced physique will have breast implants, because your tits disappear, they just do. So it is, life is a trade-off. You don't get anything scot-free. You pay, you know, what God give with one hand, he taketh away with the other.
taketh away.
I feel so good inside when I say things like that. But is it possible for somebody who's older, perimenopausal, to get in shredded physique shape? 100% yes, it is. I've seen it. Again, guys, go follow Team 3DMJ. They've got a fair few women in their 50s who are competing. It does look a bit different because the skin loses elasticity as we get older. So they are in a category in and of themselves, because it's not fair to put them next to a 21-year-old. But do they get, like, in what Emma and I would call shredded physique shape completely naturally? Yes, definitely. So it is possible. But yeah, all things to think about. Emma.
Yeah, and it is possible, but you kind of need to decide whether that's
whether
something
that's
you
something
really
you
want to
really
do
want to do.
and the costs that come with that. And even like knowing what Penny's just been through and stuff, and she said, oh, life had to come first for a bit. Cool, but do you now want to go back the other way and say, now I want to get really lean and focus everything on fitness again? Like maybe actually having a bit of a balance and looking, like Penny already looks incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
amazing.
Like staying looking incredible, I think staying around maintenance when the gym's open, like aiming for hypertrophy, but kind of as we've said, like that's a long haul game, especially if you're staying at maintenance, that you're just going to have to keep going and hope that you will build muscle, but don't expect to see it like week on week.
Yeah, exactly. And guys who really, like a lot of you, we can just hover around maintenance and have you smashing a hypertrophy goal. And if you're patient, that body recomp that you want to see without having to go into fat loss or without having to go into a surplus, if you're patient, it will start to appear. And again, I think this is the mistake that I made, is that I was always, you know, I've loved it. It's not a mistake. I've loved it and I don't regret anything and I'm still doing it now. But I do wonder what would have happened if I just started off with the amount of knowledge I had now and I had all the options in front of me. Would I have been more patient and maybe have a better physique to show for it now? There's loads of options. You guys don't always have to be in an extreme.
Yeah, Penny's just commented again saying, maybe I just need lockdown over and to dress up again. And I actually think that there's quite a lot to be said for that, because I'm like the palest I've ever been, never really wear much makeup anymore, like haven't not worn like trackies and a jumper for like, I can't even remember. And I'm like, this is why I feel shit about myself.
Yeah, it's awful. James yelled at me last night in bed. He was lying in bed reading and I was in the bathroom just like looking at my face and I was like, I look haggard. I was like, my hair is fucked, like just moaning. And he literally just screamed at the top of his lungs, stop complaining about how you look. And I'm like, okay. We all feel like shit right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Siri here, let me know if you can help.
Yes, Siri, tell me how to look better.
Okay, right, okay, we're back to the questions now.
Okay, Amy McNaughton, and I would just like to say I really like your last name.
Do you know what, as you were saying, Lucy, in the last question, do you think Lucine would be a good name for a child?
No.
Because I thought you said Lucine initially, and I was like,
oh, I like that.
Oh, maybe, actually.
So call your child Lucine.
Yeah, and then I could call the next one, like, Arginine.
Mtor. oh, God, we're such losers. It's not even funny. Okay. Amy McNaughton. I have a question about the impact of decisions related to where my additional calories come from in hypertrophy and the impact of this on muscle growth. Assuming protein remains stable and I'm always hitting my target grams per day, over 4 to 5 servings, I saw a post Emma did on how the type of fat consumed when in a surplus can impact on relative muscle to fat gain ratio. With higher saturated fat within calories can lead to more fat gain versus muscle gain compared to unsaturated fat sources. Do we know what the mechanism for this effect is? And is the same true or likely to be true for carbohydrates with respect to the impact of refined sugars, the whole grains? What a question. Emma, I haven't seen this post, so I'll let you go first and then I'll piggyback off the back of
this
it.
This is such a good question. Just because most people probably won't have seen the post, I'm going to just find it and recap it so that people know what we're talking about. I think this was... Oh, yeah. Okay. It was comparing eating saturated fat with unsaturated fat. And the impact on how much fat and lean mass that you gained in surplus.
Yeah.
Which I was quite surprised at the difference, actually. So in the saturated fat group, so that would be things like burgers and things like that, they had 20% of their weight gain was lean and 80% was stored as fat. And in the unsaturated fat group, which was things like, I mean, an example would be like, why can't I think of the fish? Salmon. 50% of the weight gain was lean and 50% was fat. So that's quite a big difference there. Yeah. And we do know, or we do think we know, some of the mechanisms, because there's also been research to show that omega-3s help with muscle protein synthesis. So yeah, there may be some micronutrients which actually benefit MPS. Just, I don't want to keep saying that word and lisping every time. So we think that's probably the mechanism, because there's also research that shows or compares, and actually we were kind of talking about this the other week in terms of how quickly MPS rates increase. And we know that probably the fastest practical way that most people do is whey protein supplementation. Yeah. And then when you look at what happens when you eat protein as opposed to that, it's slower, the absorption is slower, but it stays elevated for a longer period of time. And then when there's more micronutrients in that, there is a slight elevation in MPS as well. So it's not higher than, like, the rates aren't higher than whey, but they're elevated for longer and they're higher than they would be without those micronutrients. So something that may benefit is like omega-3s that has been shown independently of that. So that's probably the mechanism there. The other point to make on that, you also asked about comparing like sugary carbs with whole grains. I don't think it's via the same mechanism, but no, there would be a difference in that you can process sugary carbohydrates much quicker. So if you're drinking like a sugary Lucozade or something, you can very quickly process that because it's essentially coming in as glucose anyway. So there's nothing to break down, there's no fiber to break down, there's very little thermic effect of food. So there's really no cost in terms of calories of breaking that food down. Whereas if you're eating whole grains with like high fiber in, not only would you not, like, the caloric availability of that food is lower, but you're also going to spend more energy breaking that food down. And the spike in glucose is going to be reduced because, again, it's going to take time to process that food as opposed to glucose, which kind of just goes, not straight into the bloodstream, but effectively straight into the bloodstream. Such a good question. But yeah, there would be difference. And it, this is why it does matter what you eat, not just in terms of what happens on a physiological level and how much muscle you'll build, but also like your hunger levels, how full, you know, how easy it is to stick to a diet. If you're having a diet that's 1500 calories, but it's most of the fats coming from saturated fats and most of the carbs are coming from sugar, then you're probably not going to be very full. Whereas if you've got a diet that's full of, you know, your fats are coming from unsaturated fats and your carbs are coming from whole grains, you're going to be much fuller for longer. Plus, whole grains are independently linked to a reduced risk of cardiovascular disease as well. So your health is going to improve as well.
Yeah. Right. So I love this question. I haven't read the study that Emma's read on the saturated fat, the unsaturated fat study, but I have read other studies that, and again, I think this will come down to predominantly the thermic effect of food, which Emma touched on at the end there, re-carbohydrates. Let's say all calories created equal, people who were on a higher carb, lower fat diet gained less fat. And this is all calories created equal. Again, just to put a little pin in some PTs out there to really piss them off, this is why screaming all that matters is calories is not actually...
Wait, really. So this was calorie matched if you ate more carbohydrates than fat?
Yeah, calories matched. It was a higher carbohydrate diet and a lower fat diet. And the reason why the participants on the higher carbohydrate, lower fat diet lost more body fat specifically will purely be, and this is where then we come back round to the argument calories are king, but it will purely be because the thermic effect of food from the intake would have been higher, which meant that just to break down this food group, while calories were equal, they will have been expending more energy. Now, again, just like we say in every single chat we have, do not fucking run away with this, okay? This is just interesting science study. And if all it really does is it just says to people who say that you can't lose weight unless you go keto or Atkins, low carb of any kind, that's fucking not true. And I think the thermic effect of fiber specifically is about 30%. So 30% of your caloric intake from this specific food group will go to breaking it down. And I think the thermic effect of carbohydrates specifically is something more in the region of 8 to 10%. But let's just say that you're getting your carbohydrate intake from fibrous veggies, like,
yeah, you know. And for context, fat is like 1 to 3%.
Yeah, fat is 1 to 3. So let's just say that you then get all your carbohydrate intake specifically from incredibly calorie light green veg, right? A lot of that, A, it's very low in calories, B, it's very high in fiber, and you are going to be expending more calories breaking it down. We always talk about metabolism.
And C, the caloric availability of it's probably quite low. If it's high in fiber,
but like, I'm saying calories matched, let's just say.
Yeah, but the calories, that would be calories matched. So the calories going in are matched, but the calories of that food that you're absorbing aren't matched.
Exactly. And it is something to think about, and it is a perfect counter argument to low fat diets are king. No, they're not. And you know, Emma and I always talk about metabolism, you know, your BMR or RMR, your NEAT, your EAT, your thermic effect of food. We very often leave that alone because a lot of the time we're talking about metabolic adaptations, but that is your total daily energy expenditure is made up of all of these four factors. So let's just say all calories created equal. By the way, as well, anyone who's listened to the episode I did with Bill Campbell will know about the study where they increased protein via 300 calories into a surplus, so above maintenance for their participants. And every participant on the study lost more body fat than the people who were at maintenance. And this will have happened because their thermic effect of food will have been increased. They were resistance trained, which is a huge crux of the study. So that their body actually had a usage for this protein. So again, we can say, well, calories aren't all that matters, but ultimately it comes back round to the fact that of calorie expenditure. So it's really,
calories are all that matters, but you've not considered how much your body is actually absorbing and how much it's spending to break down those calories. And I think if you ever want like a really good overview of low carb versus low fat, then look at Kevin Hall's work, because he's done huge like statistical analysis of like all of the research and on both sides and found there's absolutely no difference. And actually it comes back to calories are king. But some of this research is like you're saying, interesting. Don't look too much into it in terms of what you would practically apply from these things. And then you've got to realize that what they're looking at is a very controlled setting, and the more controlled it is, the shorter the study. So for example, they might have people for 7 days living in a lab, like, so they can measure their energy expenditure and energy intake so precisely. It's completely like, it's interesting because it's so well studied, like so controlled, but it also makes it completely impractical because it's so well controlled. And you almost can't have the best of both, because if you were like, let's measure this in free living conditions, then you've got to consider, are people being adherent? Are they eating other things? How much are they moving? We can't actually know what their energy expenditure is. And in some ways that's more interesting, because you're like, okay, well actually, basically the number one thing here for a successful diet is adherence. If people could adhere to a low diet, a low carb diet better than a low fat diet, then it doesn't matter that the science says that if you stuck to either, you would lose weight. Like, it actually matters what's, and I'm not saying that is the case, but it matters what is practical in real life. Or does it mean that actually, as soon as we drop carbs, it seems that people habitually move less? Okay, so actually maybe that is a problem. And I'm not saying that is the case either. There isn't studies that show that, but it's just like, we need to know what happens in the real world and how people respond to these changes, not just on a physiological level, but on a behavioral level.
Yeah, Exactly. No, but it reinforces your point. Like, well, then they move less, and then it's like, yeah, but these settings where these studies are done are so controlled. Exactly what Emma said. There are no variables. They allow for no variables, and it's yeah, it's not applicable to. It's interesting, and it's definitely food for thought. No pun intended. But it's not necessarily applicable to Jenny from Slough.
Jenny.
Okay. Next question. Glenda Ballard. Again, great name, rolls right off the tongue. Have had 2 or 3 days in the last 3 weeks where I've either just felt hungry or felt very tired of restricting myself, re-calories, and not having whatever I wanted. Welcome to diet. Yeah. Also, if I have done more cardio, could also be the result of almost 5 months tracking. I don't feel like I'm falling off the wagon as yet, though. I read the file on refeed days and weeks and wondered if this was my answer. But do I have to do either format regularly or just when I feel that I need and or want to? I have noted that the extra calories should be via carbohydrates. I'm guessing the overall impact on refeed days is slower fat loss in the long run. Okay, so I did a post on this yesterday on my Instagram. Guys, listen, we don't want you all, and Glenda, I'm not saying this is what you're saying, but I really fucking need to say this as much as I humanly can. Being in a fat loss phase isn't fun because you do have to say no and you do have to restrict, not overly. Emma and I said this in my post, we're not trying to starve you. We're not trying to put you into hell here. But you do have to restrict, you do have to say no, you do have to be mindful of your calorie intake and your calorie expenditure every day till you hit your goal. It is fatiguing and it can be shit because we're all humans and we all have bad days and bad weeks and hormonal weeks and we want to eat whatever the fuck we want whenever the fuck we want, especially when we have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years under our belt of doing so and now we have to temporarily change our behaviors. But the key word in that little speech I just made was temporarily. We want you to adhere so that you can get there, so that we can then start to bring your calories back up, relook at your training, relook at the long-term goal. You know, historically I've never had one client who has just kind of, well, typically we have to get you somewhere before we can then maintain this result. We're not just going to kind of dilly-dally our way to the result. It's just not going to happen. You have to be mentally strong. You have to remember that you're in this to hit a goal, and then we're going to pull you out of it because we don't want you spending forever in fat loss. We don't want you spinning your wheels forever. So stay strong and stay committed. Now, one of the ways that we can make it easier is with, yes, intermittent diet breaks. So no more frequently than once every 2 weeks. For a week, we could do a refeed, a diet break, but that absolutely is going to slow down your fat loss journey. However, if you need it because you're finding it hard to adhere, then it's absolutely the right thing to do. Same for refeed days. We can do them 2 consecutive days every week or even every 2 weeks. Yes, where you come up to maintenance, by the way, this will be controlled. Will it slow it down? Yes, it will. But the ultimately, as Emma recently said on this live, we just need adherence. So if we need to do that to get you to adhere, we need to do it. Don't go it alone. If you want to do it, tag Emma or I and let us help you structure it so you don't go completely fucking nuts. Emma.
I agree with everything. I also loved your post. Like, newsflash, dieting's hard, fat loss is hard. It's not meant to be easy. Like, it's not meant to be ridiculously hard. But
no.
It like, there will be days where you don't want to do it and you need to do it anyway, or where it's a little bit harder and you need to push in if you want to get those results.
Yeah.
One question that that kind of brought up, like, if you are having, for example, and this will work better for some people and not for others, but if you're having a quote-unquote refeed day or like bringing your calories up to maintenance like once or twice a week, I do question, and this will be very individual, whether it would be better just to bring up your calories on average. So for example, say on those days you were like, right, I'm bringing up to maintenance, which is 300 calories. And if that was 600, if you did that for 2 days, that's 600 calories. Would it be better actually just to increase your calories by 100 every day? Or 89, whatever it would be to average it out. And it actually, there isn't a right or wrong answer there. For some people that does work better, for other people it doesn't. And sometimes that's more about the social side of it as well, that, okay, during the week, actually, they're really structured and they don't mind, and they'd like a little bit more on the weekend, and that kind of refuels them to then start the week again. But for some people, actually evening that out is a better option. And you'd be amazed at the difference between sometimes like 1500 and 1550, which sounds like nothing, but sometimes that can actually be the difference between adhering and not, and like allowing yourself that little bit extra of something, or over restricting and then ending up binging on it like on a later date. So that's what's hard, is like finding that balance and finding what works for you. And if you're someone who prefers a little bit more for 2 days rather than spreading it out over the week, honestly, ideally I think you probably would spread it out over the week, purely because then you're going to be fueling your workouts better, especially if you're on the lower end of calories, that actually you'd be surprised how much like 50 to 100 extra calories a day can impact your adherence.
Yes. Yeah, agree with all of that. Okay. Sarah Margaret. Hi, ladies. I noticed someone has already asked a similar question, so apologies if you'd answered it. I'll try and keep it short. It's basically a cost-benefit question. With the prospect of the gyms opening in the near future, is it possible to eventually get similar results with the home bodyweight workouts, even if the time would be longer? Okay, I'm just going to come in here. It's not about the time that you're going to get the results. It's do you have the right equipment at home to reach the failure levels we want you to reach versus at the gym where we know you do. So there's that. I've got resistance bands and a TRX system. Obviously, the gyms come at a cost, both financial and my time. And as a busy mum of four, this is quite a high cost for me. But if I'm never going to achieve muscle gain, just doing home bodyweight workouts, is it potentially worth the cost? I'm really trying to weigh this up. My current goal is some fat loss, while ultimately trying to get stronger and fitter. If you've stuck with me this long, thank you. Emma, I'll let you take the second part of that.
Okay, I think this is a really good question. And I get what she means with the time, as in she's like, I'm happy to accept slower results over a longer period of time, you know, training in a technically like a less optimal fashion at home than potentially the results I would get at the gym, which I mean, I might be able to build muscle quicker. That's how I'm reading it.
But surely, I mean, if we don't have the right equipment at home to get the results anyway, then the results aren't going to come. I mean, she says she's got resistance bands in a TRX system.
Yeah, I would say, like, you absolutely can build muscle at home. Now, if you want to be, like, bodybuilder physique style, no, you probably can't do that particularly well at home, especially not with some bands and a TRX. But as a woman, you can actually do, like, you can exhaust your muscles fairly easily with those pieces of equipment and your own body weight.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is, I think you would really enjoy going to gym, and if you can fit it in, I would. And that even if you're just going, like, say you can do once or twice a week at the gym and then once or twice a week in your home gym, or maybe like 3 times a week at home, you'll get such good results. And I know that the gym costs money, but Pure Gym's like 16 quid a month or something.
Yeah.
Like, it isn't, like, if you go to a gym like that, it's not particularly expensive and it will be so worth it. But equally, what I don't want you to feel like is, if I choose not to go to the gym or if I can't go to the gym, that means I won't get results and I should just give up. Like, you can absolutely get results at home. But you are right in your expectation that to build muscle at home with less stimulus, effectively, it will take longer and it will be in many ways harder to do. But it's certainly not impossible.
Yeah, I agree. It depends on the kind of results you want. Can you get a great physique, fat loss, and, you know, maybe not significant muscle mass, but muscle mass nonetheless, with your own body weight and some kind of TRX resistance band equipment? Yes, you can. If you're going to tell me like I want to optimize my physique, the answer is no. But yeah, look, if I also would say, like, if you divvy up how many years you would have your gym membership for and go, how much would that cost? And then put that money to buying some equipment, like a good range of dumbbells with resistance bands as well. There's very little you can't train at home. Figure out that. And then you're also saving on that time. I do get that, because in London, I'm so lucky. Like, my gym is 10 minutes away. And I didn't realize till I moved out to the sticks with James how much a 45 minute commute there and back took out of my day, and it's painful, like, especially if you work 7 days a week like me, it's time that you can't get back. So I do understand that, but again, yeah, cost benefit, I do want that physique, so I go. But maybe just think about how much getting a good range of dumbbells would cost versus that gym membership, and then you're still saving on time, so it's quite a nice, like, middle ground.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think actually if you decide not to go to the gym, buy some more equipment at home.
Yeah. Okay. Hannah, I really hope it's petite, but it might be petite.
Petite.
Please let us know, Hannah. Hi, Emma and Chloe. I feel I should know the answer to this question by now. If I choose to go for a run for my 15-minute cardio, does that count as part of my overall step goal?
Yes.
Obviously, a run is going to use more steps than kettlebell swings, for example, but I feel like I'm cheating the system.
No.
Okay. Sam Brown. I think this is how we should do all questions.
Sam Brown!
Okay, I'm happy with my body. Shock face. I can't actually believe I'm saying this. So firstly, thank you so much for your support, advice, and your brilliant plan. Oh. Now I'm moving into maintenance, and my aim is really to keep working out and maintain my results, but without having to track and weigh my food forever. My plan is to keep eating the same kinds of meals as I have been, but to carefully guesstimate portions while monitoring my weight. Do you think this is a bad idea? Would it be better to track a gradual increase in calories until I reach my maintenance instead of stop weighing the food? Thank you. Yeah, so any of you who are transitioning upward, this is a fair few weeks where you need to track. Once you have an idea of what your meals look like, how much you're eating, what your weight is, then you can always track food, or you can do a future long term. But when you're transitioning, it's the fucking worst idea in the world. Emma.
I do think that this is, we've spoken about this last time, I think, actually. That this is like a common mistake that people make, is that they're like, I finished my diet, I want to move away from tracking, which I totally get, and I'm absolutely in favor of. I think that's a brilliant goal, but I do think that now's the worst time, because you're changing everything at once. Whereas, and then you're wondering why you're putting the weight back on, because you've kind of just like let go of all, you've gone from being extremely controlled to letting go of all control, where actually. Yeah. Now is probably a really good time to slowly increase your calories, monitor what's happening, and then from there we can reduce the tracking and then stop the tracking, and then you'll be able to maintain it. But that is a process, and I do think that initially keeping tracking, especially if that's how you've lost the weight in the first place, is the best thing to do.
Claire Gillies. Why am I reading the full name?
I don't know, but I quite enjoy it, actually.
Okay. It's like, you know, when you do any kind of group, anything, and you all have to stand up and introduce yourself and say something about yourself. Oh, so cringe. Hi, I have two workout questions. It's Wednesday, but I can't see the questions posted for today, so I hope that you're seeing this. Yes, we left it up. One, I hate split squats. 2! I feel like they're my nemesis and I dread them. I find them incredibly hard. In a workout, I find them horrible and demotivating. Is there an alternative you can suggest, please? Or am I being a baby and are they just like medicine? Do I need to suck it up because they're good for me? Yes and no. I would say there are loads of alternatives, like just squats being one of them. Step ups are another one. Lunges are another one. You definitely don't need to do anything you hate or that demotivates you to train. But the joy you'll get when you start nailing them is part of the process, really. Those are my thoughts, Emma.
I agree. Like, if it's making you not want to work out, then obviously change it out. But if the reason you're not doing them is because they're hard, then that's a really shit reason not to do something, generally. Yeah. Like that. Well, that's. I'm talking to you as I would talk to myself, by the way. Like, as in, if I was like, oh, I don't want to do that exercise because I'm not very good at it and I don't enjoy it, that's a really bad reason not to do something. So yeah. I would just make myself do it. But equally, if it was to the extent that I was like, I'm not even going to do a workout today because I don't enjoy split squats, then obviously just do something else. Like, it's not the end of the world. And if you really, really don't like them, it's just I would question why I'm not doing something. And I mean that, like, more broadly as well with anything that you're doing. Like, if I was like asked to speak somewhere and I was like, oh, that makes me really nervous, I'm not going to do it because I'll be uncomfortable. Like, that's a reason to do something, not a reason to shy away from something. Like, if you're not good at something, do more of it, unless you absolutely hate it, of course. Like, if I was like, same situation, asked to speak somewhere, but I don't want to be good at public speaking and I don't want to speak, fine, that's absolutely fine to say no to that. But if it's like, yeah, this is something I want to get good at, I want to build my glutes, I want to be good at split squats, I want to have strong legs, then I would do it.
Yeah. Preach. Yeah. It's funny how you're like, I'm not saying that, and like, if ever you guys take what Emma and I say as being like a bit like jarring, trust me, it's not about you, it's about us.
Yeah. I think it's because sometimes I forget that's how I speak to myself. I'd be like, shut up and just fucking do it.
I have that all the time. I always say things when I'm like, oh fuck, I really didn't mean to offend anyone. I'm literally talking how I would speak to me in my head. Okay. 2, in fat loss, I get very lean on top. Let's start that from the beginning.
Do you want me to ask the question? Because I think I know it already.
Wait, because there's quite a few bits here. There's bits to it. Okay, there's an actual list. In fat loss, I went very lean on top. I thought I looked scrawny, and I still had big thighs and bum. So now I'm in hypertrophy. I'm in hypertrophy to try and attain a balance, build my arms up, not relate my legs, but it's chunkier. Is this split right? Upper weight, lower weight, upper weight, rest, full body, rest. One more. I aim for 5 workouts, so would that be optimal? When I get back into fat loss, would this training split or stay the same? Would you throw in some HIIT or some abs? Thank you very much.
I think that sounds fine.
Yeah. Upper, lower.
I mean, do some HIIT if you want to do some HIIT, but I wouldn't, like, I think we had another question quite similar to this as well, in like posted on the group, and it was kind of like, I mean, everything was going in the right direction. It's just like, okay, what should I change? Nothing. And I know that, like, in fact, I think she was saying, oh, I'm starting to eat like a little bit more of different things, and like, I feel like I've lost track a little bit. Should I change X, Y, and Z? It's like, no, just stop with the excess snacking and get back on plan. You don't need to change a load of things. And I know there's that temptation to change something because you think it will like remotivate you, or you've got something else to focus on. But just keep hitting those basics consistently, and that's what's going to get you results. Like with this individual, we can't really tell if it's working yet because building muscle takes time.
Yeah.
It sounds like what you're doing sounds perfect, but don't change it every week. Don't get to the end of the week and say, what more can I do? What more can I add? How can I do something else? You're just setting yourself up for failure because you're adding more and more and more little bits that you won't be able to continue doing, and thinking that more is better. Actually, just be consistent and you'll get great results.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, yeah, exactly that. Okay, last question. When doing a set, is there an optimal amount of time during reps that you should complete it? For example, I do 5 reps and then I have a 5-second rest. Then I get another 5 out, have another rest, and then do another 5. I don't think I've ever been asked this question ever in my life.
Well, I used to do that with rest pause sets.
Okay.
But
then
not...
I have an actual rest. And then I do the next set. Are these breaks suboptimal, or should I just be bashing these out as many reps as I can in one go? Emma, I'll let you take it.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. The only time I sometimes add that in is like rest pause stuff. So I might do, say I was doing like 3 sets of 10 on the chest press, and then I wanted to really fatigue the muscle. After my last set, I might wait 5 seconds, do 5 more reps, 5 seconds, do 5 more reps, 5 seconds, do 5 more reps, because you can really reach failure doing that. But I wouldn't split up all my sets into that.
No, I would say that's what we would call a finisher.
Yeah.
I do think it's suboptimal to do that with every lift. I also don't know how you're doing that with some lifts. I'm thinking, like, if I were to do, I can feel like the burn now. Okay, that's it. We're done.
We've got one more. So how many sets should you aim to do per muscle group in a training split for hypertrophy?
Oh, wow.
or I'm sure, did you cover that with Eric?
evidence suggests somewhere between 10 to 20 per muscle group per week. So obviously if you're a newbie, if you're a beginner to lifting, then, and this doesn't mean like you do, it means per muscle group. So it doesn't mean per exercise. Per week, anywhere between 10 to 20. And if you're a newbie, it would be closer to that 10 mark. Intermediate, somewhere in that 15 range. And if you're an advanced, somewhere in that 20 range. And that's basically increasing volume over time, which is bettering progressive overload. But in tandem with that, obviously, you guys want to be increasing your intensity too. So, yeah.
And also, Becky's been really nice and said we both look really tired. Thanks, babe. Thanks. But she does say, I think you both deserve a holiday and thank you for all that you do. So,
I mean, I agree with the. I had this from one of my clients the other day, Sarah. I was like, wow, Chloe, your diet face is really coming through. I was like, I don't know if this is a compliment or an insult.
Such a backhanded compliment.
Oh, well, thanks, guys.
Okay, love you all. Bye.